That's exactly what it was. Psalm 105:25. Yeah, that was it. No, I'm not surprised I got the verse right. It's just that, I mean, there's a lot of verses in the Bible. I don't know all the references. That's true. There are some people who know every verse reference of the Bible, but they don't know the truth. Yeah, like that, right. Forever learning, never coming to a knowledge of the truth. They like, I got the Bible memorized, and it's like some great thing. Oh, do you? Okay, well, have you ever heard of the salvation of all? What? So what if you have the Bible memorized? Yes, I suppose I am trying to console myself that I don't have the Bible memorized. I'm sorry. Why memorize it when it's sitting right here and we have concordances and reference tools? Good morning, everybody. Martin Zender here. And let's go to that verse. I found it for you this morning. Oh, I killed a giant roach this morning. This roach was the size of a Volkswagen. And as you know, I hate to kill anything, but it's really hard to kill them because they're so big. Some of them are big. Some of them are little. I can handle the little ones. The big ones, I just have to steel myself, take a shoe, and kapowie, send them into Hades, figuratively speaking. That is the unseen realm. Their spirit returns to God. This body returns to the soil. The soul goes to the unseen, and a random leg laying on the side continues to twitch, which is troubling. Is this leftover spirit of God? I ask myself this. A roach leg is over here. The roach, pretty sure it's dead. It is dead. It's dead. The leg is separated and it's twitching. What is that? It was about this big too. If you look at the studio cam, one leg of the roach was this big. Don't look, Judy. You don't need to hear about these things. Anyway. So I thought that's the leftover spirit of God. It's electricity. There's some sort of electric impulse. We know that our bodies have electrical impulses. If you stub your toe, you get this tingle, this sensation goes all the way to your brain, and you can count the seconds. It's like counting the seconds between lightning and thunder. You know, the lightning strikes, and then the thunder comes later, and because sound is slower than light, the speed of sound is slower than the speed of light, you can count the number of seconds. And I think the random rule of thumb is, what, 1 mile for 5 seconds? You can tell how far away the lightning strike was. You see the lightning strike instantly because light travels faster than sound. And then you wait for the thunder. Da, 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 da. Where's the thunder? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 seconds, 1 mile per 5 seconds, 1.5 miles. The lightning struck 1.5 miles away. Fascinating. Why am I talking about this? Does this have to do with the roach? Oh, possibly, yes, okay. So the roach leg, must have had some leftover spirit of God in it. Oh, I was talking about, yeah, you stub your toe in the surge goes up your leg, and you can tell it takes some time to reach the brain because you know it hurt. You know you just hurt yourself, but you don't feel the pain till like a half a second later. So in that time, there's an electrical current going up your leg. And the breath, there's an interesting passage, which I shouldn't even try. I shouldn't even attempt it right now. I'm going to have to paraphrase it. It's like the breath is the lamp of the Lord. The breath of the body is the lamp of the Lord, searching all the innermost parts. So the Spirit of God searches our bodies, and it searches the innermost parts. It infuses everything. And I'm thinking that electrical power, there's got to be some spiritual activity going on there. I think it's part of life, this electrical power. As I saw this leg twitching, what is this? Why is it twitching? Stop. Leftover spirit of God just doesn't want to give it up. The spirit of God doesn't want to give it up. I love it. Even a roach leg. Nah, I'm not leaving the roach leg. I'm gonna twitch, leftover. It's not plugged into the wall circuit. Where's the electricity coming from? I can understand why my computer works. It's plugged into the wall. I can understand why this light works. It's plugged into the wall. This thing has a battery. I understand how that works. As a battery. Where's the power coming from? This roach leg by itself in the middle of the room, twitching. Where's the power coming from? It's coming from an outside power source. To me, that roach leg twitching in the middle of my room just minutes ago is evidence of the Spirit of God operating, not only in the sons of humanity, but in the sons and daughters of roach mothers and fathers, roach families, roach communities. I don't mean to disparage the housekeeping skills of the owner of this home, because it's very rare to see a roach the size of a Volkswagen here. But there it is, there it was. Let's go to Psalm 105:25. I got that verse right. Here's the context. And start with verse 24. What is this? The study Bible? Oh, this is the New American Standard Bible. Okay, and he caused his people to be very fruitful. This is in Egypt. What's the reference? I told you, Psalm 105:25. Please, let me concentrate. Okay, and he caused his people to be very fruitful and made them stronger than their adversaries. But he turned their hearts to hate his people. That is, the hearts of his adversaries, the hearts of Israel's adversaries. He turned their heart to hate his people, to deal craftily with his servants. So he caused the Egyptians to deal craftily with Israel. Now, and the word hate is in here. He turned their heart to hate. Hate is a sin, isn't it? Depends on who does it. God loved Jacob, hated Esau. Obviously, it's not a sin. It's a dislike relative to the like. It's not absolute dislike. Hate is not absolute dislike. It's not. I remember my parents used to tell me, don't say you hate anyone. Just say you strongly dislike them. I should have reminded them then, I would have, if I had known, that dislike is actually the definition of hate. Strong dislike is the definition of hate. Don't hate people. Just do the definition of hate. Can't you just definition of hate those people? Don't hate them, but just dislike them incredibly. That's fine to dislike someone incredibly. We understand that. Just please don't hate them. God bless my parents. I understood that because hate seems like such a terrible word. But when we see God taking responsibility for turning people's hearts, this applies to our verse in the Unveiling, chapter 17, verse 17, that God is imparting to their heart to form his opinion to the heart of 10 kings, to form one opinion, to give their kingdom to the wild beast, so that they will go after Israel, so that they will persecute God's people. If you're an Israelite, you're like putting a gun to your head here. It's like, when is God going to give us a break? Then it's important that you go to the book of Hebrews and chapter 12. God disciplines those he loves. He scourges every son he receives. And if you are without discipline, then you are bastard people. Now, God, I won't have that for you. I won't have you be bastard people, so I'm going to discipline you. And I am going to use other nations to discipline you. I'm going to use kings to discipline you. But trust me, Israel, I'm not going to leave you alone. And at this time, Israel's saying, please leave us alone. It's fine. It's fine. You can leave us alone. God says, no. The worst thing, what's worse than being disciplined by God, not being disciplined by God? The worst thing is being ignored by God. That's horrible. You don't want it. It's horrible, Israel. God loves you. He's not doing this to you. He's doing it for you. He is bringing you to the end of yourself, to the end of your self-confidence, so that you will have confidence in him. And that's going to feel fantastic when you find out the deliverance. I haven't shared this anecdote in a while, so many of you probably have not heard this. I read a story on the internet about a businessman who was traveling in a jet plane, a fancy airplane, big airplane. And the plane experienced turbulence to the degree that, people were screaming. That's bad turbulence when people start screaming, wetting their pants, things like that. And this is a businessman, type A personality, in control of his world. Suddenly he was out of control. Suddenly his world became subject to outside forces over which he had no control. And he, of course, what happened was everything was fine. The plane eventually came out of the turbulent air. But he found out that during that moment, he felt a peace that he had never felt before. Because for the first time in his life, he let go. And he realized that his fate was outside of his hands. Because every day, this man carried the weight of his fate in his own hands, according to his own grand estimation of himself. And that's pressure. That's the worst kind of pressure. It is marvelous to be delivered of self-confidence. It's marvelous. Those of you and of us, we who believe in the sovereignty of God, to us, we don't understand why these Christians are complaining. I don't want to be controlled all the time. I don't want to be controlled by God. I want my own will. Are you crazy? You want responsibility for what happens to you? That's this businessman. He believes he has a free will. He acts independently, and so he's his own God. No wonder you're tired at the end of the day. You're your own God. Why is that guy so tired? Well, he was God all day. It's hard being God. You burn a lot of calories. You burn a lot of thinking calories. You burn a lot of worrying calories. Carrying the weight of your own expectations, your own hopes, dreams, goals. And no wonder you collapse. Well, this guy got delivered of all his imaginings that he's the captain of his own fate when he was on this plane. And it started to shake and he thought it was going to crash. And he felt great. Felt great. And God gave him that gift to show him that here's the secret. Here's the secret to that. It's that way all the time. The airplane moment exists constantly. It's just that rare, beautiful occasion when God makes you aware that that's how it is. And so he gives you the airplane experience and you go, wow, that was weird. No, that's not weird. That's the way it is by default. God's always in control of your fate. God's the real captain. Yeah, I know that dude sitting in the cockpit, but God's the real captain. And he's always in control. It's just nice once in a while he gives you a practical experience when you wet your pants and scream and spill your little bag of peanuts. Ooh. Maybe I'm not in control of my own world. And maybe, just maybe, it's more relaxing to not be in control of my own world. Israel, this is your upcoming gift. You are finally going to be delivered of those noses in the air looking down on everyone else. You're finally going to be delivered of struggling and straining to be better than everyone else, to do that extra thing that pleases God extra ever so much and puts a little feather in your yarmulke and makes God just stand back and say, wow, that guy is amazing. No, do you know what God wants? He wants you to stand back and say that he is amazing. That's a radical thought for you, I know. I know, but that's okay. It's going to take a sledgehammer, a wrecking ball, if you will, a load of dynamite, an atom bomb to change your world and deliver you of the self-confidence that has plagued you for centuries. As individuals, but especially as a nation, God is concerned about this. That's not right. Let me retract that. God purposely put you in this situation so that when he delivers you, it's going to feel so good. And that is the truth. God is locked all up in stubbornness, Romans 11:32, that he could have mercy on all. And it's the mercy that delivers from the stubbornness. It's the mercy that brings the relief, like that businessman experienced on the jet. He experienced a relief. finally. But the relief is only possible if he has struggled for years under his own illusions and delusions. You have to struggle first before the relief can be felt. And then when the relief comes, it's the contrast that brings it home, makes it real, and makes it last. Israel, you are going to feel the contrast of self-confidence and confidence in God. So God is not forsaking you. God will bring you to himself. But read the 12th chapter of Hebrews. He does this through discipline, but he disciplines those he loves. If he didn't love you, he would have left you alone completely and never come back to you. This is not him. This is not him. He loves you. He's your God. He will bring you into the kingdom through disciplines. You will give birth to the new kingdom, but not without the travail that comes before. Trust him. He has not left you or forsaken you.